This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Hey, most people in the building thought he might take a look at shooting that. Now here's a turnover in front. Vince Dunn scores. Canucks fail to manage the puck in their own zone, and Vince Dunn pounces on it in the middle of the ice, and just like that, it's 4-3 with 1:12 left in the third period. Derek Forbert near corner, pushed to the end boards by Montour. Hugh Suter back to the puck, lost it to Schwartz, got into the slot, low shot, stopped by Decker, rebound, he scores! Jaden Schwartz to the net, has his second of the afternoon, and the Kraken have clawed back from a 4-1 third period deficit with three straight goals.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Myers knocks down Stevenson to center. He's got the puck himself. Left wing into the Seattle zone. Myers delays into the slot. Miller and Besser missed it. It's a 2-on-0 for the Kraken the other way. Vince Dunn in on Demko. Shoots, scores! The Seattle Kraken end their five-game losing streak with a miraculous come-from-behind win this afternoon in Vancouver, capped off by the overtime winner off the stick of Vince Dunn. And the Canucks let a 4-1 lead slip in the final 5 minutes of the third to fall 5-4 to their division rivals from Washington State.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
My goodness, Canucks cough up a three-goal lead in the third, losing 5-4 in overtime against the Seattle Kraken. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah, Bik Nazar, we are going to bring in Landon Ferraro into the conversation in a moment. You can get involved in a discussion. Grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And you know, coming into this game, Landon, we talked so much about how Canucks are undermanned, right? No Quinn Hughes, no Elias Pettersson, no Filip Hronek. We're talking about three of the four best skaters, you can make the argument, right? Not playing in this game. So obviously, up against it, it's tough. And for about 55 minutes, I thought the Canucks did a really good job. Admirably, too, for the most part, especially their defense. They held it together. They defended well. Demko made some good saves. And that just all evaporated the final few minutes. Juulsen and Soucy mishandled the puck. That leads to the 4-3 goal. Forbert, who's been so clean all game, all of a sudden misses the puck behind the net. Leads to the 4-4 goal. And then Tyler Myers, when you have an odd man chance going the other way, the worst thing to happen is a breakaway going the other way. And that's exactly how somehow the Seattle Kraken ended up getting a breakaway. And Vince Dunn makes no mistake about it, ending the game 5-4. You can't help but laugh. We were just kind of laughing at how that all kind of unfolded at the very end of the game. It's a mixture of bad luck, but also you got to bear down. I know you're undermanned, right? We know it's not easy. And the Seattle Kraken obviously are playing hard and fast, and they didn't give up. You got to give them a lot of credit. But it doesn't matter. When you have a three-goal lead in the third, you can't cough it up like the Canucks just did.
Yeah, and I think the fact that the part of the game that went pretty well for the Canucks was putting the puck in the net. They were, you know, coming into it, you're losing two massive pieces, especially off of scoring, so you're a little worried of where those goals are going to come from. Well, they got four of them pretty good, and then it was the fact that they just couldn't hold it at the end. There's multiple different points of, you know, after the first one goes in, a time to reset. After the second one, before you know it, though, a lot just happened, and it was some bad bounces. You know, Demko's, you know, missed glove that just does not happen for him. So there's one. Another one goes off Juulsen. You listed the other two. The overtime one, what I think happened there was Myers does a great job of stepping up, creating that body check, taking the puck. He's thinking he's on a rush by himself. And then right at the last second, I almost guarantee he heard one of Miller or Besser yelling for it. So he figured, I need to try and make a play. And then I know that feeling when you turn up and you see two guys' sticks both kind of pointing in there. You try and hit one, but you split the difference so many times just because you quickly in that split second realize you try to pass to both of them and yet you miss both and it ends up going back down the other way. I would think this is going to be a tough one to swallow simply on the fact of all the guys out, the pieces that were out, and playing such a good game, and then to throw it away at the end just makes it that much harder.
Yeah, I imagine the tough part to swallow is, like, it was on their sticks. It'd be one thing if, like, the Kraken with the net empty, you know, work some quote-unquote power play sequence with the extra guy, and they crafted open an opportunity and bury that. Like, we're talking about, like, the puck was on your stick multiple occasions here at different levels, right? Like, the And even the 4-2 goal, it's kind of a fluke occurrence, goes off the backside of Noah Juulsen, and that kind of gives them the glimmer of hope. But the other three, it's like it's on your stick in the defensive zone at pivotal times. That really does have nothing to do with, like, no Quinn Hughes, no Elias Pettersson. That's, you've got a responsibility to handle the puck in tight situations, and it just didn't happen.
And I think the one that hurt the most, I mean, obviously it was the tying goal, but the other ones, at least there was not an excuse, but, you know, it was just a bit of flukiness.
Sure.
Like, you know, like you just said, like the one that hits Juulsen and goes in, like that's just an unlucky bounce on your side. But the last one, Schwartz has the puck on the half wall as he's taking his steps off. He takes that shot. Demko kicks it back out. And somehow Schwartz is the one to be able to get on the inside of all five Canucks and get that rebound himself. Like, that's something where you need, especially late up one, like all five guys collapse, you cover that middle, and you make sure no one gets inside
of
you.
It was free access for him.
It was free access, and it was just way too easy to finish that rebound in.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, right? Like, we talk about the team getting back to its staples and showing that they can do those things. And, like, again, like, if you would have told me they lost this game 5-4 in overtime tonight, you know, before the game, right? If you would have told me before the game, 5-4 overtime, pick up a point with these guys, I'm like, hey, you know, at least you got a point. But it's how you blow the game, right? And I'm sure the coaches, too, as much as you want to give credit and be like, hey, the guys fought and you got a point and we'd be happy getting the point. But it's almost worse when you lose the way you lose, right?
I was thinking about that exactly as that was all unfolding. Because pregame, we all sat together and, you know, batten down the hatches, try to get a point, try to get the result. Obviously, you're depleted today. And we mentioned, like, hey, process, yeah, it's important, but in a situation like this, just do the job, get points, and move on. And then we see this game play out, and suddenly we're talking about process here, because it does leave a sour taste in your mouth of how this game went, because the opportunity is sitting there to get 2 points in regulation, and now we're talking about, for the fifth time this year, they had a third period lead, and they don't close it out.
Because the reality of the game changed.
Yes.
Like, you can talk about it going in, all things being equal. Like, this is your reality. Find a way to get the point. But when you have the 3-goal lead, the reality is you're now in control, and the expectation is no matter who is in the lineup, that you take this one home.
Yeah, and that's one where when you have a lead, especially even when it got to 4-2 and it's later in the third, like, it doesn't matter who you have on your team at that point,
yeah.
I believe. I think it's more about each player understanding and knowing that there has to be desperation. I don't mean desperation where you're throwing pucks as soon as you get it. You have to make hard, strong plays.
But be first to the puck, though.
Be first to it. And, you know, again, like, not to kind of harp on these two, but it was just I feel like the goal that hurt the most in Juulsen having it on his tape in the in the corner,
yeah.
And he tries to make that play through the middle. Like, that's probably a position where you just push it back up against the wall, eat it till you have a bit more help. But then it goes, and that's what we were talking about, you know, throughout this year of compounding mistakes. So that ends up going to the middle. And now instead of Carson Soucy stepping into that puck and just rifling it and making sure it gets out, he tries to make a nice, like, kind of chip play to get it and make, you know, in his eyes, he's like, I'm going to put it over everyone's head. It's really easy to mess up that flip under pressure, and he didn't get all of it, and Vince Dunn's standing right on top of him to cash in. Like, it's just a really hard, like you guys said, like, it's a really hard way to lose. Regardless of your lineup, you've done such a good job through 50-plus minutes of the game, and yet you find a way to squander it.
I think that phrase, a hard way to lose, it works in both fashions. A, it's hard feelings when you on the receiving end of a loss like this, but also it should magnify. Like, it's difficult to play the way they did the final 5 minutes. Like, I'm flummoxed with all the textures too. It's like, I'm stunned that's transpired the way it did.
Well, and there's so much frustration too, right? A lot of people texting in, like, time for a change. Like, they're mad at management for not making the right moves for the defensemen.
Certainly,
at least
yeah.
How they view it. They don't like how the coach is, you know, coaching. And when you lose a game like this, that's what happens. The frustration boils over, and you're just looking at every single player and everybody that's involved. And, you know, I just, not to just bring it back to Myers, but you just got to make smarter decisions. Like, there was that one play in the first period, too, when the Canucks were on the PK, and he winds up and takes a slap shot that gets blocked, and there's an odd man rush going the other way. Almost like, you guys have the injuries. There's no Hughes. There's no Hronek. You're the guy who's played 1,000 games in the NHL. Like, you have the experience. Just got to be smarter, you know? And that one didn't cost them. And I know you mentioned the play in overtime, too, that you know, maybe somebody's calling for the puck, you're trying to make a play, but it's just, you're the veteran. You're supposed to be the guy that now leads the way, and you play leading by example and make the right plays, and just too many low percentage decisions, and those are the ones that end up costing you.
And I don't want to make it sound like I was trying to make an excuse for
Myers.
Like,
yeah, I know what you
mean. Like, that play happened. Every single three-on-one that pops up in games from time to time, even two-on-ones with a late guy joining, that the guy that's joining, he's not thinking about, oh, I might mess him up if I yell here. Like,
yeah.
You're trying to create more opportunity. Like,
what's communication, if
yeah,
anything?
Like letting him know all of his options.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's up to the player with the puck, regardless of what he hears. Even if Myers makes that turn up and he sees, like, okay, I have Besser right in the slot, and I could try to give it to him, but if that play's not there 100% off your first look, you just got to hold on to that and wait again. Doesn't matter that, you know, you, because I, in your head, you're thinking, I've just on a break, I could have had a chance myself, now I've turned up, like, I don't want to leave this with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to force that pass into it. You just need to accept that, all right, well, that one didn't work, let's hold on to it, make sure, maybe get a couple new guys on the ice, try and overwhelm them with a bit of speed.
I just wonder, too, because, you know, sometimes we sit here and we try to take the temperature of the fan base and the textures that are coming in and, you know, stabilize it. And, yeah, I'm reading some of the texts that are coming in, and, like, I can't refute any of them. I agree with the frustration a lot for tonight. And, you know, we try to take some things out of this game every single time we're here. And I'm just curious, like, from your vantage point, in situations you've been in these spots, like, what do you try to take out of this as a player moving forward?
Honestly, I think at this point right now, it's more about not even taking a good thing out of it. It is, you know, again, none of us have been in the dressing room. We don't know what words have been said just between the players, with the coaching staff and them. But I think at this point, it's understanding, like, guys, we have an issue of not even just at the end of games. There's been different points, especially on home ice, where it might be in the first, it might be in the second, it might be in the third, but there is a chunk of time that we lose our composure and we don't stick to what has done good.
Yeah.
Again, like, we watched 50 minutes of very good Canuck hockey, of understanding the lineup, the situation, all of it, and they kept plays moving north. There's only a couple turnovers at the far blue line. Like, all of it was good, but, and Rick Tocchet had said it actually earlier, of when a team presses, we need to find ways to make plays still. I want guys to be able to make plays under pressure. Well, that was it, exactly.
Yeah.
And what we found out is, at least on this afternoon, they didn't have the composure to make that play.
Yeah, and you know, the one guy who's also taking some heat on the text inbox, and we'll get to more of your texts and your phone calls in a bit here, is Thatcher Demko. Rob says that's two weak goals from Demko. So the first one, which he gets a piece on the glove, it does get tipped, but he gets a glove on it, and usually goalies say, if I get a glove on it like that, I should save it. So fair enough. I think the other one people are referring to is the one from Schwartz. That hits Juulsen and goes in. The last two, I mean, they're right in front of the net, banging shots, and I'm not sure you want to blame those. I mean, can he make a spectacular save on one of them? Perhaps, but I'm not sure you blame goaltending necessarily for the game tonight. But, yeah, I mean, Demko also didn't make that spectacular save, I suppose.
Yeah, and I mean, it's tough because he is such a unbelievable goaltender that has a track record of being almost in the Vezina talk, you know, without an injury last year. And he didn't have his stuff fully tonight. But again, like, it's only his sixth start. Like, he's been off for a long time. It's, you know, there's been multiple players on the Canucks, you know, skaters, where they've had some tough stretches or they've been coming back from injury, and we allow them some time to work back in. But just because it's a goalie and he's the last line of defense, we're not okay with it now? Like, that just doesn't seem right to me. And I know the last goal doesn't look great. You know, it's a breakaway, but anytime you see a puck go through a goalie, like, it's a little tough to take, especially someone as big as Demko, but I don't think you can put that on him. I think it's on the guys that have been in 35 games now that haven't found a way to really collapse in deep, especially when holding a lead late in a game, being able to collapse in, holding everything to the outside. Any puck that comes in, they eat it. Like, it's a winning type of mentality that you have to get it through your head.
The thing is, through 55 minutes, they kind of were doing that. It took the Kraken 12 minutes to get their first shot on goal.
Well, it really starts with that Juulsen giveaway to Soucy, right? Because, like, the goal from the tight angle, okay, whatever, it hits off Juulsen and goes in, bad luck, you chalk it up. But if Juulsen doesn't cough that puck up to Soucy, and Soucy, if he's able to get that puck out, they don't score on that sequence, this game's over, right?
Suddenly like everything's nullified, right?
None of this is happening. And for Juulsen, again, like he's made such strides, right? And I thought he had overall pretty good game. Had a couple moments, of course, but it's just those are the plays where you just can't allow that to happen. And that's what usually, you know, prevents a guy from being able to be a full-time guy playing up the lineup, right? It's just you just can't have those moments that critical that late in the game.
What's so tough is there were so many encouraging elements throughout this game for 55 minutes. The PK was strong. All these things. And then it gets undone in 5 minutes. And suddenly now this game story is, like, what's real? What's too much of an overreaction? Because, yeah, like if we're talking about trying to take this next step and, you know, get back into the season to a certain standard of challenging for the division, like I this to me is a marker. Like all those things aren't going to happen until changes are made.
Well, that's going to be the big thing. And Landon, last one before we let you go. Like, how do you balance back from giving up a loss, losing a game like this? You got Seattle coming up again. You're playing them not on Tuesday. You start off in Calgary. Then you go to Seattle. And then you have the game coming up at home on Friday. So three games of four nights coming up. How do you bounce back? And what do you need to see from these guys on Tuesday?
I think it's less of we need to take a breath. We need to understand that we're okay. I think it's time for the guys to be, not that they haven't been in the past, but they need to play angry next game. They need to show that, I don't think they need to show it to any of us or fans. Like, they need to do it for themselves.
Sure.
To show that there's fight in here. We know that the Canucks have fight in that dressing room. And I don't mean drop the gloves fight. I mean what the Bluger line did for the most part tonight. They were solid again of no messing around with the puck in the neutral zone. They got it in basically every single time. Every time there was a turnover in the offensive zone, they had their second guy on it super quick. Well, that caused another turnover. So now that they had the puck back, like, they were one of the few lines, again, over the past few games that have been very consistent in grinding teams down low. Like, that's what needs to happen here. There doesn't need to be any more, you know, we had some good lines or some good chances and all this stuff. Like, it's, guys, like, we need to fix this right now. It doesn't matter where we're sitting in the standings. We're still holding on to wild card spot. Like, all of that, that's great. But you know they're not happy in there. And this one not only hurts, but pisses them off a pretty good amount, I'd imagine. So I would like to see, you know, just some fight right off that opening faceoff, letting the other team know that, hey, you know what happened to us last game. You're going to be in one tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll see what the status is going to be for players like Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. But Landon, great stuff today, calling the game on radio, jumping on intermissions on TV as well, doing a bit of everything today. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. I got my steps in today, so that means I don't have to go to the gym till, 2028 or so? Yeah. I think I can make that work.
You're good. You'll be all right. You'll be all right. That is Landon Ferraro. Great job calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor here tonight. Keep getting your thoughts in through our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. My, oh my, is a text inbox hot tonight, Bick. Fans are very frustrated with what they've seen so far. Kevin Burnaby says, not even an ECHL team collapses like that. But again, that's where this team belongs, without Hughes. Wow. So Kevin Burnaby not very happy with what he saw, but that's kind of been the common theme. People texting in and saying, whether you're an ECHL team, AHL team, you're in the NHL, you have a three-goal lead, and you have 5 minutes to go. You take that home. It doesn't matter. You don't lose a three-goal.
And again, like, the puck was on your stick.
Oh, yeah.
If this was a scenario where the Kraken, like, empty net, and they worked it around, and it's like, wow, okay, they opened this opportunity, and they just really beat – it's on your stick.
Yeah.
You got to be able to close this out. Again, you can survive one mistake. You can even survive two, Sat. You had a three-goal lead.
Yeah.
With minutes to go. And you just made blunder after blunder after blunder, and you put yourself in a situation where even then, Sat, after three miscues, you're still in OT. And you think, all right, I don't know how we're in this spot, but let's see what we can do. If we get beat, let's make them beat us. No, let's do a spinorama pass in 3-on-3 OT and
just
queue up a breakaway for Vince Dunn.
No, and honestly, when you saw the way he was looking at the play, you knew that he wasn't going to connect with the pass, and I'm like, just don't turn it over. And literally, that's what happens. I just started laughing as soon as the puck went the other way. But
we were getting a ton of texts of, like, I don't know what else to do but laugh.
Oh.
And genuinely, like, I don't know, man. It might be, like,
I don't know how you go
Canucks
from having
fandom sympathy
an odd man rush in overtime to a breakaway.
A 3-on-1.
I just
you had a 3-on-1, and it's 3-on-1 with JT Miller and Brock Besser, right? Two incredible players on their own right. You just there's like one spot you can't put the puck, and you probably win that game. And he puts the puck in that spot.
Yeah,
like it's mind boggling
for sure.
I know we're here till 5:30. I think I'm out of words already.
Well, you got to conjure up a few more, man. We got 90 more minutes to go.
I'm fumbling it just like they did.
Yeah, go to the thesaurus right now and come up with some new words.
Al from Nelson, what pains me the most after this loss, it's literally giving away 2 points. We're in the tightest race right now, and this loss really stings in the standings. Yeah, certainly. Certainly. Because it was sitting there with 5 minutes. Like, all right, like, hey, that's a decent job done, and you're going to get up to 43 points. And as we were saying pregame, again, it wasn't the prettiest game, but you did the business, right? You're on track to get 2 points, and then now you're sitting here. It's like, well, it's 42 and 35, and I know it's just 1 point difference, but like this has been the theme. They've had 17 chances now with the going into the third period with a lead. They extended the lead in this period to set. They came in with a 2-goal lead. They get the goal, and they okay, that's done and dusted. But now they've dropped 5 points.
It's
a lot.
They add up, right? And again, you picked up a point. This text message here says, considering their injuries, it's a point gained, not a point lost. So there are people that look at it positively in that sense. Cole Harbor Hayden says, the loss was on Demko, sadly. Everyone else held their feet, their end of the deal. But when we needed him, he wasn't able to make the extra save. Yes, you can say he could have made a save, but those blunders were bad. Like the Juleson giveaway, it's a horrible pass in your own zone in front of Susie. Susie can't do something with it. I mean, you can't give the puck away in front of your own goal like that. You just can't. Like that's I know the goalie you can make a save too, but that's literally as bad a turnover as you can have, pretty much, right? And then Forbort, I think he just misses the puck behind the net. We'll break this down a bit more on the game tying goal. Yeah. Like he has it along the wall. If he carries that over, who knows, right?
Again, it's still a stopped puck in the corner. And it's not as if it was just some rush chant. As Landon was saying, you have every opportunity to get guys in position. How did Jaden Schwartz go from a stopped puck in the corner to free and clear through to the net? Like, he was untouched to gain access into the most premium area with a minute to go. That just cannot happen. Even though there's a mistake, right? Mistakes are going to happen. How did a player go free and clear through your defensive zone to right in front of the crease? Like, bodies have to get on him.
100%. And those are the things, and we'll hear from the head coach too, who I can't imagine is going to be overly pleased with what happened on the in the third period, the final 5 minutes. Amrit says, though, the game is on target. Maybe instead of forcing Hughes to play the game before the break when he's clearly hurt, he plays today and they win, perhaps. So even Rick Tockett taking some heat on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. All right, we'll get to more of your texts as the show goes on here, but let's also take a phone call. Let's go to Coquitlam, where we have Paul on the line. Paul, thanks for calling in. Now, what do you have for us tonight after a 5-4 overtime loss on home ice against the Seattle Kraken?
Hey, guys. I don't even know where to start. I've got so many thoughts in my head right now, most of which are, you know, feelings like disgust and shame. But I was just thinking about, so, you know, I've gone to a game this season, dropped $200 for a ticket. Other people pay $300, $400, $500 for a ticket to watch this team, and their record this year at home is 7 wins and 13 losses. I mean, that you've got twice as good a chance of going to the game and watching a loss than you are a win. They, in their 50 whatever year history of this franchise, they have not had a winning percentage this bad at home. Like, that is, like, put aside, you know, yeah, of course their defense minus Quinn Hughes is absolutely terrible, and they've got other problems on the organization, but just as like a business, that is terrible business. People do not go to the, yes, people go to the games to, you know, for entertainment and whatnot, but people go to the games to watch the Canucks win, and they are losing constantly in front of their home fans. And I don't know what the solution is, but they need to fix this fast, because this is a terrible, terrible product that they are putting in front of their fans and expecting fans to drop $1,000 plus to go take their family to this game. So anyway, that's just my rant for today. I'll leave it at that. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. That's Paul in Coquitlam, frustrated with what he's seen and fans coming to the game. And he's not wrong. Facts only. They've lost considerably more than they've won on home ice so far this season. Let's take one more phone call here, and let's go to Surrey, where we have Melvin on the line. Melvin, thanks for calling in. Now, what are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, just saying, I absolutely agree with the last caller there as well. And I have to put all of the blame in this loss on Juleson. To me, it's all of his. And yes, other players get involved, of course, and whatnot all, and even that. But Alvin has really got to start doing something with on the trade market or find a way. You know, Juleson absolutely couldn't play on a peewee team with plays like that. Also, I agree with what Brendan Batchelor said in the game. What does Hoglander have to do to buy a goal?
I hear you.
I don't understand what's wrong. He had he had 23, 24 goals last year, mm-hmm. and now it's like he wouldn't know how to score on the empty net. Something's got to be done with the team, and Alvin's got to get on the phones and really start pressing other teams to pick up some sort of help. Hey. Anyway.
Good stuff, Melvin. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate the thoughts. And, you know, on Hoglander, have one shot and one shot attempt. It's like, if you're going to score, you got to
throw a few more pucks on net. Garland just engineers a takeaway out of thin air on Jamie Oleksiak there in the second period and then feeds Hoglander. I'm not even sure he got the shot off.
I don't think he did. Because that's not his shot on goal. And I don't think that's the one attempt that didn't even come across, right?
Tough, man. Like, you're wide open in front of the net. Yeah. Forget even how do you buy a goal. Can you buy a shot on goal in that spot? That was a tough moment there for Nils Hoglander. I know there's a lot of texts that come in, a lot of people saying, hey, this guy should be higher in the lineup. I don't know what else you want to do with that.
Yeah, I don't.
You're by yourself in front of the net on a play that Connor Garland's done all the hard work, and there was a 3-on-2 later. Garland bringing it in the right hand side.
And guess who didn't pass it to?
Hoglander was the trailer, and it was a clean, obvious pass available. And Garland went for a short side shot. And, why not? I gave you a pass earlier, and you completely ruined this chance.
You see the lack of confidence, though. But I thought, to be fair, he was forechecking well tonight.
He was, the line to go retrieve pucks. He was awesome.
He had this one play in the third period where he dug a puck out on the forecheck. He circled around, beat a guy.
Against three cracking players.
Yeah, and beat the guys. And he cut towards the net, goes into the slot. And instead of just forcing it towards the net and just kind of creating a scramble, he throws a pass up to Myers. It's out of his reach. The play kind of gets stopped and nothing happens. It's like even when he does something good, the next play isn't the right decision. And that's what happens when you don't have the confidence clearly. And, he just needs a goal, man. If he gets a goal, I think it'll change. But it's a tough goal for Nils Hoglander. The Canucks, however.
But how are you supposed to get a goal when you don't even get a shot on goal from a prime
opportunity? No doubt. But it goes back to the confidence, right? Yeah. Like you haven't scored a goal in, 20, almost 30 games now for Hoglander without scoring a goal. It's a long, long stretch. All right. Keep getting your thoughts into our text inbox, 650-650, courtesy of Dunbar Lumber. We'll get to more of your thoughts there. We'll get to more of your phone calls, 604-280-0650, your toll-free 1-888-275-0650. We'll hear from the Canucks head coach and a lot more analysis next. It is a Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. More next in the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
3 minutes left in overtime. Canucks and Kraken tied at 4. Myers knocks down Stevenson to center. He's got the puck himself. Left wing into the Seattle zone. Myers delays into the slot. Miller and Besser missed it. It's a 2-on-0 for the Kraken the other way. Vince Dunn in on Demko. Shoots, scores! The Seattle Kraken end their 5-game losing streak with a miraculous come-from-behind win this afternoon in Vancouver. Capped off by the overtime winner off the stick of Vince Dunn.
And the Canucks let a 4-1 lead slip in the final 5 minutes of the third to fall 5-4 to their division rivals from Washington State.
And Dunn picks up his third point of the night. He had the 4-3 goal and now the 5-4 overtime goal. Tyler Myers did a great job of stepping up and creating a turnover on and moving down the ice. He turns back up, tries to make a play, but splits Miller and Besser, doesn't get either of them. Now Vince Dunn takes off the other way with no one able to catch up to him.
Canucks lose 5-4, a third period meltdown in the dying minutes, end up losing in overtime, had a 4-1 lead with 5 minutes to go in the third. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Keep getting your thoughts into our text inbox. You can also grab a phone line. And Johnny and Colmock says, without Quinn Kubota Hughes playing 60 minutes, this team is cooked. Face it, we have a team that gets hot once every four seasons. Why can't we have nice things is what this text from John and Colmock says, and a good one, talking about the heavy lifting Kubota does. Same thing for Quinn Hughes. I see you working. Nicely done there, Johnny and Colmock. Before we get to the phone boards, and we are going to get to the Canucks head coach's thoughts, Rick Tocchet, when he gets to the podium, what else are the people saying on the text inbox pick?
650-650, Ashton and Surrey as a lifelong fan. You can't help but just laugh at stuff like this. I mentioned to someone at 4-1, they were definitely going to blow this lead, and sure enough, they did. Where do they go now? I'm not sure if I had an immediate answer for you on that one, Ashton. 650-650. Again, a lot of frustrated thoughts here. Velvet Elvis in Kelowna. This is what happens when you quit playing with 10 minutes left. Doesn't matter which players weren't playing. It's a team mentality of quitting when they're ahead. Chris, that was the worst display of hockey I've seen in the last 5 minutes. Just when I was going to praise Susie and Myers and the defense, they go and put in a show like that. Demko was terrible, too. And that's the thing. Like, even the game-winning goal might have perfectly encapsulated this game.
Yeah,
like, Tyler Myers does a lot of good work to get the puck and create a 3-on-1,
and that all gets evaporated,
all of it, and
you know,
through 55 minutes, like, this would have been a really, like, wow, like a heroic performance, right? You're missing some guys, and again, it's not the number one team in the NHL or anything, but it would have been a strong performance given the way they played. And I know we talked about process and results, like, there was a lot of good things for 55 minutes, and all of that good work gets evaporated through 5 minutes of chaos.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you know, this one, you know, from Amon in Surrey says, the Canucks didn't even play all that well in the first 55 minutes. They were average, not good enough. And, you know, they're not making the same mistakes. They're making mistakes they weren't making last year. It's a long text that goes on about the effort and you know, how you're seeing this team not have the same chemistry and how they've been very frustrating. I think you have to be realistic about what to expect. Like, I thought for 55 minutes the defense did, considering the degree of difficulty, I thought they defended well. Now, there were a lot of chances. I do think Seattle had the better chances. They weren't able to connect. There's a few plays where they didn't get a shot off. They had a couple odd man rushes, weren't able to get a shot on goal.
But the odd man rushes even came from just Canucks falling over. Like, Noah Jolson falls over on
a play. Yeah, and Desharnais fell over on one.
Falls over
for sure. So there wasn't, again, like, for 55 minutes, defensively, the Canucks were playing well. Mm-hmm. Like, in our notes, and, you know, we talk about storylines post-game, one of them was, hey, let's talk about the team game, the team defense. We have Susie that listed. We have Jolson listed. We have Forbert listed. And even Myers. And I thought Myers was a bit, you know, there was more variance in his game, I thought, good and bad moments. I thought the other guys were overall solid. But the final 5 minutes, it's where you win and lose hockey games, right? And that's where they lost the game here tonight.
Even the penalty kill, right? They
were terrific on the PK.
Just terrific. They had three kills. They give up one shot on goal on the penalty kill on three attempts. That's awesome. Like, that would have been the difference in the game. So you just got to seal off 5 minutes, and then we can sit here and talk, hey, great night for the penalty kill. That's the thing that springs forward. But no. No. It gets undone by, you know, the thing that we knew coming into the season, this was going to be, you know, how do they survive with this defense until they make changes. And there was positive developments, and, you know, Juleson's had good games, but then now you sit here, we're near the midway point of the season. We don't know how long the absence is going to be for Quinn Hughes. Hronek still feels like 3 weeks away. And you're looking at this and, like, man, I don't know. If you can't trust them in this spot to hold a 3-goal lead with 5 minutes, what else are we talking about here?
Yeah.
It's tough. It's hard to build cases to say you can survive another 3 weeks when you can't hold on to a three-goal lead with 5 minutes to go against a middling team.
Yeah, exactly. Remember, we're not talking about a team that's been playing well. We're talking about a team that's struggling, right, in the Seattle Kraken, yet here they are pulling away with a 5-4 victory. All right, we'll get to more of your text messages coming up in a moment, but let's go back to the phone boards, and let's go to North Van, where we have Terrence on the line. Terrence, thanks for calling in, and what are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, guys. I think one of the biggest things we have an issue right now is the coaching philosophy. It's not the first time where we've blown a lead in the third, and our guys just tend to that lead, and it's just not getting us anywhere. If we meet aggression with aggression, the other team's chasing, they're trying to score goals, we're more likely to potentially get a goal in the other way. So I think, you know, I get Talk has to do what he has to do with the guys he's given. But, you know, it's been time and time and again where we give up goals in the third period because we're just sitting back. And, you know, the Kraken pull their goalie with 3 minutes left. I get it. It's a little different then. But when it's 5-on-5, like, we should try to generate chances and see if we can, you know, score a couple goals.
Yeah, 100%. Hey, thanks for the phone call, Terrence. Call back again. Appreciate the thoughts. You
the
know,
thing is, too, is like they scored the goal.
Well, they did. Right? Well, they had four goals.
They scored the goal to extend the lead in the third period.
It was a three-goal lead.
A lot of people got what they wanted. Like I was doing the intermissions, and people were like, I hope they don't sit back. I hope they go get another goal. They got the goal.
Well, they had one disallowed, too. Could have been 5-1. The one from Dakota Joshua got disallowed.
Yeah, they pushed. I'm with everyone. I was like, oh, you got to go push. I totally get that. But with the three-goal lead for 5 minutes left, you should be able to just stay in your own. I don't even care if you just flip it out. You should be able to seal that off.
Yeah.
Even if you never skate out of your zone, you should be able to seal that off. And they just don't.
Yeah.
They just didn't tonight.
No, and I think that's the frustration, right? These are things we talked to Landon about this. It's not about being undermanned and not having enough guys. When you have a three-goal lead with 5 minutes to go, you got to take that home. It doesn't matter who's playing. You know, you're all in the NHL, and you should be able to prevent three goals from happening within 5 minutes. And that's ultimately what the Canucks were unable to do.
Just because Terrence brought up just coaching, and I think a couple of people have messaged this in, be like, why didn't he take a timeout? Why didn't Rick Tocchet take a timeout after the 4-3 goal? I believe Seattle
took a timeout.
Seattle
had a timeout.
There's been a lot of texts about that. So just if you're thinking
there
about
was
that,
a timeout, yeah.
Yeah, there was a timeout.
Seattle took one, so yeah. I mean, I'm not sure it matters at that point. I mean, would Tocchet have taken one if Seattle didn't? Okay, that would have been a fair criticism, but, you know, Seattle takes a timeout, so the Canucks got their timeout.
Yeah.
You know, so
the thing I didn't understand, and I said this to you right away, is I didn't understand why Dakota Joshua was put out there.
He
even played like 11 minutes.
So I think this is where when you have the 3-1 lead and you give up a couple of goals, I know you want to get other guys involved, but don't you just close the game out? You know,
yeah,
like put your best forwards out there. Yeah.
At 4-2, I can understand.
No doubt.
You're like, hey, I'm getting an opportunity.
But it's 4-3.
And now it's 4-3, and you've been kind of fragile throughout the course of the year. Like, for me, Teddy Bluger's got to be out there.
Yeah.
I know JT and that whole line was just out there for the 4-2 goal. And, timeout.
Get the Bluger-Sherwood-Heinen line out there.
Suter, Garland, Bluger, Heinen,
you have three
Sherwood.
Lines. Three lines were playing well tonight.
You had plenty of – and now you got the timeout, so you don't even need to go to Suter's line, to Bluger's line, to JT's line. You got the timeout.
So these are deployment things, right?
Yeah.
I think these are completely fair.
That to me would be a question. Like, 100%. Hey, why was Joshua out there with Suter and Garland in that spot? Okay, Hoglander's coming out. Okay, that's fine. But to me, like the line to put out there was, or just get Teddy Bluger on the ice in that spot. That was an opportunity that, for me, like that. If we're talking about coaching situations, at 4-3, you got the timeout, you got a chance to reset. I would put Teddy Bluger out there every single time.
I'm with you on it, man. A lot of reaction on the text inbox. 650. this one says, the Canucks, fragile is the word to describe. They have been fragile for a few years now, especially when they have the lead. And, you know, the funny thing is last year they were good with the lead. This
41-1-4.
Yeah. Like that's
unreal in the third period.
Only one regulation loss after having the lead in the third period. This year it's changed. And this text says, didn't they give up a 4-1 lead in the first game of the season? The more things change, the more they stay the same. And, again, you were healthier in that game.
Yeah.
You blew the lead against Calgary. This one, you're not as healthy, but nonetheless, there's no excuse in blowing a 3-goal lead. All right, before we get to the Canucks head coach, let's take one more phone call, and let's go to Surrey again, and where we have Nathan on the line. Nathan, thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
I can't do it. I can't do it anymore, boys. I hate being right. It's a trap. It's a trap, boys. Every single time I text my fantasy group chat at about 10 minutes, I'm like, I got a bad feeling about this. How do they go deer in headlights and stop skating when they have a 3-goal lead? And you know what? This isn't just the players. This is coaching. Tocchet's chip and chase passive system isn't working. Soucy goes from delivering Hughes-like passes to Besser to blowing the game in the third. Forbert had an easy crack at the empty net. Why are they passing? Just shoot the darn puck. This isn't pass-off top pickup basketball. Is it defeatist that I knew the Chaos Giraffe rush was going to show shades of what he did to Markstrom in 2020, 2021, creating a 3-0 for the Blues in overtime? How does this continue to happen? As of right now, I no longer have expectations for this team this year, and my belief in this core is dwindling. How many Noah Fulsons are we going to bring in before they realize that we need NHL-caliber D-men and not tweeners? Boys, it wasn't even the tying goal that set me off. On goal three, I snatched the remote in the words of the world's greatest rapper of all time. Turn this TV off! Turn this TV off! Turn this TV off! Turn this TV off! Crazy, Soucy, scary, hilarious. I'm going to play my piano to calm down, boys. Actually, you know what? No. I'm going to go hit the gym, unlike Vic, to blow off some steam. Good night, fellas.
Attaboy. That's a healthy way of working out your frustrations. I like
Plus
it.
Plus,
like
still
that.
Early in the day.
I know, that's a good thing. It doesn't ruin your night. Maybe your afternoon, but your evening is still intact, hopefully. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get to more of your phone calls as well coming up in a few moments, but let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach, and he is at the podium, courtesy of Tiletown.
Rick, what did you see in terms of some of the breakdowns that allowed that one to get away from there at the end?
Well, you guys saw it. We had a control, a couple of mistakes at the net. We needed a couple of composure plays. We didn't get them. I'm sure that some of the guys feel bad, and we did a lot of good things. 4-1 lead.
You guys have been pretty good in a lot of 6-on-5 situations this year. Is it a composure thing, as you allude to, or what does it take to salt games away in those sorts of
moments? Got to protect the guts of the ice. We had a couple of guys didn't get. If we get to the middle, the puck gets pushed away, but we didn't. You know, the guts of the ice was wide open, and they get a rebound goal. Can't happen.
Mentioned the guts of the ice. Can you take me through their third goal? I think the Juleson play out of the corner to Soucy, which winds up in your net, and whether you see it as one of those types of plays.
Yeah, it's an execution play. It's a breakout. You know, hit the pocket or whatever. Even when we made the mistake, same thing. I think Soucy had it instead of. It's got to be a hard play wherever he does, and he kind of flipped it, kind of knocked it down. I mean, these are execution plays. I mean, I'm sure the guys are upset and pissed about it. You know, you have to execute.
I'm sure it would have been a different feeling when you were 4-1 and doing it without two of your best players. You know, how much does this hurt the other way? This isn't a regular loss in terms of how it got away.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, doing a 4-1 game, you're feeling good about yourself, and then obviously, bing, bang, you know, three plays or four plays or whatever, how you want to say it, they're execution. You know, we have a 3-on-1 at the end. We don't it's just their execution plays. So we can't throw everything out in the water because I thought that for the most part the team played well.
I was going to say, like, you had 55 minutes essentially of quality play without two of your best players.
Yeah.
Did you like how, especially like a guy like Carson Soucy stepping up and providing some offense with a nice assist, did you like how they stepped up in their absence through most of the game?
Yeah, I don't think they had, like, I don't know how many shots, 17, 16, with about 8 minutes. We were in good control. Like I said, I don't know if it's the 3 days off. I don't know. But we were good till that point. In that 5 minutes, you know, you can look at every goal that we had the puck where we could have executed a play. Even we had the puck twice with the empty net. I thought a couple guys could have skated with a little bit longer than throwing the middle. They're just execution plays.
Is there an element where maybe you're missing a little bit of the calming influence of Quinn Hughes as your captain, or even a calm guy like Elias Pettersson on the bench in those last 5 minutes to kind of settle things down?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get guys playing more minutes now. And like I said to you guys at the start of the day, it's opportunity. So, you know, guys that maybe not might be out there the last 2-3 minutes are getting an opportunity. So you're looking for players to embrace that.
You just said you don't know if it was 3 days off. Do you mean in the sense of just setting the rhythm off, or what do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. When you look at execution, we were pretty good for 55 minutes. All of a sudden, there was like four not execution plays in a row on the goals. You needed, we needed, you know, like you said, somebody, you know, calm the waters down a little bit.
The one that goes in off Juleson's behind, yeah. Was that just bad luck? Did that set your guys?
Well, he's got to box out Sprong, and if not, he's got to get out of the blue. That bad things happen when a defense just stays in the crease. You got to get out, whether you box. But he should have boxed out earlier. He just stayed in the blue, and that's what happens when you throw pucks on net.
Do you have an explanation for your overtime record as a whole? I know you're focused on each game, but collectively now it's pretty bad. What do you think is going on at 3-on-3?
Execution. Executing plays. And then defending properly.
Do you worry that, you know, with these points adding up, that they make a difference at the end of the year, that maybe it feels
Yeah, this one slipped away. These ones hurt, but you got to, you know, we got to come back tomorrow, have a good practice. That's just the way the world is, you know. We have to pick some guys up. I'm sure a couple of individuals don't feel good about themselves, but we got to make sure they got energy tomorrow and be ready for the next game.
What about Demko? Obviously, a lot of other things you refer to execution, but sometimes you also just need a save. Do you feel like he's where he needed to be tonight?
Yeah, we had a 4-1 lead. Scramble goals off of guys, you know, off our defenseman. You know, the other one, you know, scrambling if we protect the guts. No, he was fine. You know, Demmer's the least of our problems.
Rick, I know you went through this morning, but can you say what is the issue with Hughes and Pettersson? Any idea how long they might be out?
I don't know. I haven't talked to the dogs. Game day. I don't know about the evaluation. Probably talk to them tomorrow. Get more of an update.
Okay, so right now, no, it's day to day.
As of now, I'd safe to say that.
You loaded your top line up. You got three goals. I pointed that to Jake DeBrusque. He said, but, yeah, we still lost. I mean, what do you make of your top line's performance tonight?
Yeah, that's why I put them together. You know, Bess has been hot lately, so that's good, contributing. So, that's a good sign. You're getting some production from the top line. Yep.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. So the coach, obviously frustrated with what happened at the end of the game, said you have to close it out. And this one stung, this one hurt. But you could tell he was also trying to take the tone of not being overly critical with his guys, especially with the guys he's going to need on the back end. I'm sure part of him just wants to roast some players, but if Quinn's not back, and we know Hronek's not back next game, you have to rely on these guys again. You have to build them back up again. And same thing for the guys that may have made mistakes in the forwards. As frustrated as he is, you probably don't want to bury the guys and make them feel even worse about it. You're trying to, you know, really circle the wagon here until you guys get healthy. So I can understand why he took, you know, a bit of a more of a measured approach. But he was very clear, and he mentioned execution, what, like 7-8 times?
40 times.
So he said execution, defending properly. This one slipped away. This one hurts. We have to execute better. You can't let those things happen, but they still happened. And I think that's what he has to kind of navigate now is, you know, letting his players have it, but at the same time not having the players who made the mistakes lack the confidence to make proper plays on Tuesday when they're in Calgary.
Well, he said it near the end when mentioning that this one slipped away and we're going to have to pick some guys up because I'm sure guys don't feel too good about themselves right now and have to feel good for the next game. And that's his job prior to the next game, getting ready for Calgary, is making sure these guys are back up to a spot where they're feeling just better about themselves, because more than anyone, like, they don't need to be told how bad this was. They're very aware that this game was on their sticks. And as Jerry and Abby texted in, I've played competitive hockey my whole life, and I'm usually pretty tamed and accepting on the way a game can go. If I was a Vancouver Canucks player, I'd be vomiting in the dressing room after that game. I'd be leaving my vehicle at the rink for a few hours, running 5K around Vancouver, and doing some soul searching. And yeah, like, as frustrated as people are and as mad as you are right now, I bet you those guys, and hopefully, I'm making an assumption here, but I bet you they feel like they're very aware that this was on them tonight.
I can guarantee you, and like the coach mentioned, Noah Juleson grew up following this team, liking this team. He's more than happy to be a Vancouver Canuck because he loves representing the city and this organization. I don't think there's a player who feels worse about what happened than Noah Juleson himself does, right? Like, and same with Myers. We know these things weigh on him. It's just – Land makes the point that these mistakes are no longer things you can coach. It comes down to the player simply not being good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a coach doesn't rewire a player's personality. That's all fair. But there are some plays you can still, like, execution is true. But if that was the case, good players would never make mistakes.
Right.
Mistakes happen. You will have moments where you don't execute. And we've seen Juleson play a cleaner game. And to me, for Myers, this goes to the Myers experience, right? Like, it can be fun and chaotic. It can also be very costly. Like, you're so right on that opportunity in overtime. Like, he creates it. He gets the puck. Like, he does so many good things, but he gives it all away.
And that was a statement of the game, basically, that, again, even Rick Tocchet's saying, like, yeah, we had a 4-1 lead. We're feeling good. And then he does the Joe Pesci, bing, pow, boom, and suddenly you're down and you're game over. And you just made your mistakes themselves. And it's tough, too, because they did do good things, but now you're sitting here and saying, well, 5 minutes can undo 55 minutes of good work. That's now the spectrum of what this team is capable of. It's not – you know, we've sat here and said, like, oh, they've had a good game, they've had a bad game. Well, now it's happening within a game that 55 minutes of good work can be undone by 5 minutes of bad work.
Yeah.
And that, oh, man, I don't know how you, like, play with the baseline of that.
Well, you know, like, somebody texted in, and I thought they're on the right track with mentioning, hey, they blew a 4-1 lead in the first game. Mm-hmm. Look at this game. Different circumstances and all that. But the lack of so-called execution, critical mistakes, not protecting the middle of the ice, you know, not good puck management. These are things that have plagued them all season, right? So now that you're undermanned and you've had these moments this year where your details haven't been strong, you haven't protected the guts of the ice as well as you want, is it a surprise that it falls apart? You know what I mean? Like, it's not like this is out of the ordinary. We didn't see anything that happened tonight, Bick, that we hadn't seen at some point this season.
Yep, that's fair.
You know, and I think that's the other part of it. It's like, again, you're undermanned, and if you would have told us you pick up a point against Seattle with the injuries, you'd probably take it. But you don't blow a 3-goal lead with 5 minutes to go. Anybody in the NHL understands that. You know, like, everybody understands that.
Even if it's San Jose versus Florida or Chicago versus Florida.
But
if Chicago's got a 3-goal lead with 5 minutes left, they should seal that.
And there's still work to be done here for these guys to play to the team's identity. We're what, game number 35 on the campaign, and we're still talking about this team hasn't played to its identity consistently. They did 55 minutes, but lost to the final five. You know, and those are the things that have happened a lot. All right, keep your thoughts coming in, 650-650 to a Dunbar Lumber text inbox. And you can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And we'll get to more of your thoughts and comments coming up on the other side. Plus, we'll hear from more Canucks players, and we'll break down everything that happened in a 5-4 overtime loss on home ice against the Seattle Kraken. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. On the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
It's Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650, and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
There goes Grubauer, now into the final minute. Derek Forbert near corner, pushed to the end boards by Montour. Hugh Suter back to the puck, lost it to Schwartz, cutting to the slot, low shot stopped by Decker, rebound, he scores! Jaden Schwartz to the net, has his second of the afternoon, and the Kraken have clawed back from a 4-1 third period deficit with three straight goals to tie it at four in the final minute.
I don't think they had, like, I don't know how many shots, 17, 16 with about 8 minutes. We were in good control. Like I said, I don't know if it's the 3 days off. I don't know, but we were good till that point. In that 5 minutes, you know, you can look at every goal that we had the puck where we could have executed a play. Even we had the puck twice with the empty net. I thought a couple guys could have skated with a little bit longer than throwing the middle. I they're just execution plays.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet not happy with the execution, the lack thereof. especially in the final 5 minutes, blowing a 4-1 lead to lose 5-4 in overtime against the Seattle Kraken. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. A Satin Bic on Sportsnet 650. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to the phone boards coming up in a few moments as well, so please hang in. We'll get to your thoughts. And, you know, a lot of people texting in, too, about this team needs to do something. Bill says this is on management. They did nothing to upgrade the defense. It was clear it was a major problem. Others texting in, the Canucks have to make a move. Our friend Gary from North Shore, who's currently in Arizona, says, I'm a diehard Canuck fan. I want to trade my Orlin Kurtenbach jersey. And I know, can the Canucks make a trade? Can they trade their entire blue line except for Quinn Hughes? Like, what are the Canucks going to do? They've been trying. Mm-hmm. The thing is, it's hard to acquire those defensemen. And not to repeat ourselves, but the Canucks, the longer they wait, the more cap space they accrue to make more deals. But we know this front office also likes to get ahead of it. We're past the holiday break. We're heading into January very soon, and that's usually when
getting close to the halfway point of the season.
That's where they like to make some moves. I don't think you can force a trade. It still has to be the right player for the right price, or at least within the price range. I don't know if these losses and these performances expedite it. I just think it's about still aligning. You know what I mean? Like, I wish I could tell you guys the trade's going to happen tomorrow. They're just waiting for more evidence to go out and make that trade. I don't think it's them trying to wait for more evidence. It's just they haven't aligned on it yet, and I don't know if that's going to be around the corner. For the guy the Canucks are trying to get, which is somebody that can play top 4 minutes, that's a tough deal to make, and it may take some time still.
Yeah, again, I'm pro patience, as always, and there's benefits to it. As you mentioned, the cap accrual, and you're still 69 days away from the NHL trade deadline. Obviously, there's going to be a Four Nations break in there as well. Again, logically and rationally, Sat, yes, you are 100% right. Patience is a virtue, and you can have success doing it and approaching this rationally to give yourselves the maximum cap space, and do you enter in different markets, and it just provides you with more options. You're absolutely right. And I'm not even saying, oh, you got to make a trade before the Calgary game or anything like that. But if this doesn't expedite the whole situation in general, then like that to me is like a misstep from management.
But like, the thing is, but how do you like? I get that. But
no
it's
way,
like,
there's no way to understand. Be like, oh well, right now we have it earmarked for January 30th. We're gonna make that trade, and now we're gonna do it January 17th. Like I get it. I totally get it. You make the trade when you make the trade, but like there should be a strong realization that, boy, I don't know how much longer we can.
So okay, so here's the thing then: how much are you willing to overpay to make that deal now then? Like, that's what it comes down to. Like, if the reason the deal hasn't happened, obviously, Captain Obvious here, they haven't aligned with value, mm-hmm. which means that they would have to pay a higher value than they think is worth to make 100%. That trade. Do you do that?
And how
much more value do you give up to make that trade?
Here's the rub, as the Bard would tell us. Not only how much more do you actually want to pay, are you confident that this is the group you want to reward?
Well, that's the other thing.
And that's the other thing. The fans are going to text and be like, what do you mean you can give up more assets? They're right now 42. They're a team that's on multiple occasions displayed they're capable of blowing 3-goal leads.
There's a text I want to get to here in just a moment which talks about that and makes an excellent point. And that's the other point. And I think what the Canucks are looking to do is, regardless of where they're going this year, they're trying to add a top four defenseman who can be with this team beyond this season.
Service years, right? Yeah.
You know, age, contract. They want somebody that goes beyond. So even if this is not your year, you can get that guy like they did the Hronek trade a couple of years ago. I think they'll make it. I don't think it matters. But to your point, let's say there's a rental you can trade for and give up a second-round pick for, which would help you right now. Mm-hmm. Is that worth doing?
Yeah,
and I think that's the other thing, right? That's something you have to consider, because this text came in. It's funny because right before we came back from break and we just finished talking about how, hey, you know what? Like, this has kind of been part of their identity. They haven't found their identity. Like, mm-hmm. at what point are you what you are? Like, is this what you are? You know, and this text says, you guys keep saying this team hasn't played to its identity and we're 35 games in. What's obvious is this is their identity. A bubble team due to this horrid defense. We knew this D-core was their Achilles heel, and it showed game in and game out, and nothing has been done to address it. By the time they do something, it may be too late to salvage this season. I'm hurt to be a fan of this team. And so far, the Canucks are what they are, which is an inconsistent team that's found a way to get results. And you give them credit for the results. Like, they're still on pace for, what, 98 points now mm-hmm. on the season or whatever it is, right? In the playoff race. Like, they've done a good job being there. But they haven't shown that they're anything more than a team kind of just fighting to get in. In fairness, Have they had anything resembling good health at any point where you look at it and say, hey, we've seen them show their best? Multiple things are true here. That hasn't happened. Yep. But the other guys in the lineup are also not doing the things to the team's identity, so to speak, that we saw last season. So it's a multitude of factors. It's not just one thing, but it's a fair point. Like, if these things keep repeating, at some point you are what you keep putting on tape, right? And so far on tape, we've seen a team that struggles with the lead in the third. We've seen a team that struggled with situational hockey, and they've had trouble protecting the middle of their ice. And that has cost them a number of times this season.
Last season, when they went out and made the Lindholm trade, and even though there was ardent, you know, people that were like, hey, don't do this. Do not give up assets for a short run, be misguided. Even those people would still have an understanding that there's a level you're meant to reward your guys for the performance they put on.
Yeah.
Right? There's still a core concept that even if you disagree with the idea of making the moves, you understand why they're being made. This, to go do the levels of acquisition now, is based on projection and a certain leaps of faith. And that's where it gets to be scary territory, that if we're talking about, hey, they haven't played to their identity, wanting to go make an acquisition to say, honestly, I kind of believe that this group is better. And with just a bit of an infusion of talent, we'll see what that potential looks like. And that's where it gets scary, to that texture's point. It's like, it's true. Do you want to base the reality on what's happened and say, hey, look, this is what's happened through 51 games and it deserves to be rewarded, so let's go out and reward it. Or do you say after 40 games, I think there's more. Like, that's a tough struggle
yeah.
for any fan to live in, let alone executives that have to make those decisions.
Yeah, and fans are calling for it, man. They're calling for a move, some sort of a trade, and we'll see if this front office can pull one off here in short order. Let's go to the phone boards, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Poco, where we have John on the line. John, thanks for hanging in there. What are your thoughts here after a 5-4 overtime loss against Seattle?
Yeah, tough game, guys, this afternoon. But a few thoughts. Like, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was the 4-3 goal. Yeah, that was a Juleson. Like, you know, I understand he couldn't go up the boards because he was pasted by two Kraken right with him on the boards. But then the play then is to reverse it around the net, not throw it into the middle. That's hockey 101. You don't cough the puck up in the mid, you know, to the middle of the ice. And sure enough, that was a backbreaker. The other thing, guys, is, you know, if the same scenario was in the Utah game. If, you know, you're up in the game and, man, the opposing team pulls their goalie with more than two or almost 3 minutes left, can we not ever just buy an empty net goal to salt it away? I mean, other teams seem to find a way to do it often enough, and that, you know, that would sort of take some of the pressure off. But, you know, the more you just ice it or you miss the net, invariably you lead. It could lead to what happened, even though it shouldn't. As we've said, you should be able to, you know, walk this game home. And I guess my final thought, Sad, and because, you know, the Canucks are obviously, as you said, they've shown what they are this year. We're not the same team as we were last year, and precariously holding on to a wild card spot. Is we're probably going to need some help, and by that I mean other teams like Edmonton and LA to maybe go into a bit of a swoon. And I mean, there's no guarantee they will, but it's highly unlikely they're going to play 680 hockey till the end of the season. So just see what you guys think. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. I mean, you know, as far as where the Canucks are, 42 points in 35 games, they're in a wild card spot right now, right? And they have a 3-point lead on Calgary, which is the first team below the second wild card spot, and the Canucks play the Calgary Flames coming up on Tuesday. So that 3-point lead can be a 5-point lead with a game in hand. So if you take care of business, you can be sitting here, you know, 7 points above a playoff spot. So
Sorry, the Flames have a game in hand.
The Flames have a game in hand. So it could be 3-5. Nonetheless, you can be 5-point up, and the Flames have a game in hand. So you're not just hanging on to a position. You're in a wild card spot.
It's in your control.
It is. The teams above them, if they want to be in the race to actually win the division, that's starting to slip away. You're 9 points back of Vegas.
Yeah, that feels too much.
You know, and yeah, they're 46 games to go. A top three spot in the division? No. I mean, right now with Edmonton, they have the same amount of games played, 3 points back. Same amount of games played as LA Kings, also 3 points back. So they're still within range. Only three back, which is not that much to make up with 46 games to go. The nine against Vegas, unless you go on a type of run that Edmonton went last year, which is unlikely for you to win
and
as much
as they did. They didn't even
No, they didn't win the division. Except, yeah. Well, the Canucks had a bigger gap too,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
But nonetheless, so I'm not right now concerned about the playoff spot, so to speak, because even the Utah Hockey Club, they're getting healthier. They've lost three in a row. All those teams are kind of in that middle, and the Canucks, maybe they're not too different, but they've picked up more results for it. But I'd
still overwhelmingly back them to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm not sitting here today after this loss being, oh, the Canucks aren't going to make the playoffs. That's not my takeaway after the game here today, right? And the question, though, is what is your ceiling?
Yeah.
And they haven't shown us yet because they haven't been healthy and they haven't played the type of hockey you would say is good, consistent, contending hockey. And until they show that, you're not more than a bubble team, because right now they are a bubble team, so to speak. They're just on the right side of the bubble.
I'm actually kind of just fascinated for these next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, to see what the conversations are like for the fan base. Just exactly all the things that we were just chatting about. Because, you know, Jeff and Langley's pointing out, it's like you're wasting prime Quinn Hughes years. Like, you have a guy that's has a claim to the Hart Trophy.
100%.
How many times are you going to have a D-man playing at this level? And so what do you want to do in the reality of what you have? Again, I might be in a situation where I'm willing to always be aggressive and always back this group of players. And I understand that's a leap of faith. But like the things that like are happening on the ice is Quinn Hughes is spectacular.
Well, he's been unreal. Now the question is how long can he, you know, actually
keep
be gone
up.
For?
Sure,
right? When is he going to come back? And that's the other thing. The head coach offered no updates on Hughes and Pedersen's status. And when asked if they're day to day, he said, "Well, for now, because I don't have any more information." But I wouldn't take that with any degree of certainty at all. That it's simply day to day. Hopefully, we get more information tomorrow from the team before they head out to play the Calgary Flames. But you know, we'll see ultimately where that is. But I just don't know if you can not only sacrifice this year, but potentially next year if you do too much. What if this team's not good enough to do anything, and then you give up all these assets, and you're out in the first round again? Then you're sacrificing next year as well. Then it becomes 2 years. You know what I mean? So,
totally.
Like, I'm all for being aggressive, and I'm not saying don't be aggressive, but I do think you also have to think of it as, sure, we don't want to waste any Quinn Hughes years, but you can't compound things so much that you end up wasting next year as well. You know what I mean? And that's the thing you have to be careful for. I'm all for it. Be aggressive and don't waste the year, so to speak. But you also can't chase this year at the expense of next year and the final year of Quinn Hughes' contract, because you want to be able to at least have a couple more shots at it. But we'll see ultimately how that goes. What else are you seeing on the text inbox, Vic?
650, Brandon. This team's got a major problem defending Leeds, Calgary, Buffalo, Ottawa, Utah, the Sharks, and the Kraken. All games that should have been closed out that ended up being one-goal games. It's like 10% of the 2022-23 team identity of blowing leads still exists. That is Brandon in Vancouver. Just to illustrate the point, too. Again, I've mentioned they're 12-0-5 now with leads in the third period. That means they've picked up 85% of the potential points when leading after two. And that puts them in 24th in the league. It's like there are teams like the Leafs, 18-0-0. When leading after two, they're crushing it. This is something the Canucks were so good at last year, salting away games, ending them, and that has not been their reliable factor this year. And they're chasing a lot of games this year.
No, they have. I mean, you've had the stats too for how much they've been leading versus how much they've been trailing and how much they've been tied, and it's been a lot more than last year.
It's
right?
All hovering about 32%, 33% for each one of those game states. Whereas last year, they're up near 45, 50% in leading the games.
Yeah, they're spending a lot of time trailing and being tied with teams so far this season. All right, let's take one more phone call here before we get to the top of the hour. And let's go to New West, where we have Sean on the line. Sean, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
My thoughts on the game is really, I mean, losing a game like that to a bad hockey team. And let's just be real. The Kraken are a bad hockey team. They were coming in losing, five straight games. They're just not a good hockey team. And they come in, they score, you know. Yeah, the defense problems the Canucks have, it's well documented. But there's no excuses blowing a 4-1 lead against a bad, bad hockey team like that. That's not going to get a sniff of the playoffs this year. So, I mean, the silver lining, I mean, yeah, they got a point out of it. They, you know, somehow still got a point of it. At the end, it looked like they may not even get a point with that shot at the end, I think, that they had. But, you know, it's just not good, obviously, you know, blowing a lead like that. But you still, or like you just mentioned earlier, they're still in the wild card spot. You're still, you know, you've got rest of season left. You know, you still can still accomplish, you know, everything you need to accomplish in the regular season and getting into the playoffs.
You know, you've got, you know, Seattle fans chirping me and stuff like that. But just remember, to Seattle fans, they're chirping me, my friends. I'm a perfect 4-0 in Seattle when the Canucks play there. And when I've gone to those games, they've never lost. So I may have to go down there Thursday night and stop their nonsense and hand them their loss on Thursday night in Seattle. So
start calling it Sean Pledge Arena.
Yeah, exactly. I own that building, and I am 4-0 in that building. So if Seattle fans, Crackle fans want to gloat about this win, which they can have, they will not be gloating on Thursday night. And that's all I have to say about that.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. Great stuff. That is Sean in New West. So he is the secret weapon then for the Vancouver Canucks.
There you go. Let's see if we can start 2025 off in style on Thursday night.
Yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope so. And when we look at what the Canucks have coming up, the next few games here, like three pretty winnable games.
Yeah.
They have a back-to-back coming up on Friday and Thursday, but still very winnable here. Like, to me, it always comes down to how do you bounce back, right? And especially if you want to be able to keep that, you know, playoff position, especially until guys get healthy here. You have Calgary, you have Seattle, you have Nashville. These are your next three games. And then not to mention the Eastern trip, which starts off in Montreal. Like, even with your injuries, you come away and take care of business these next three games here, and hopefully you have your guys back at the very least when we head on that Eastern road trip. Like, you're in a far better position as far as your playoff seeding and positioning goes, right? Like, Peter and Langley says, hate to burst your bubble. They're not going to make the playoffs. There's a lot of fans that right now, especially with how they played tonight and lost the lead, don't have a lot of faith. But you know that switches quickly if you take care of business against these teams.
My faith that they're going to make the playoffs is also rooted in I just don't see believable claims from Calgary, Utah, and St. Louis. I think the eight teams that are right now in playoff spots are the eight teams that are going. Winnipeg, Minnesota, Colorado, Vegas, L.A., Oilers, Vancouver, Dallas. I just think those are the eight teams. I just don't know if Utah's got enough of a ceiling to get there. I don't know if Calgary, like, I think they're going to eventually just kind of wind out. It's been very admirable, but I think by the time we get to February, we'll see them to start to slide away a bit more. And so, like, I just don't know if there's enough teams to push the wildcard teams to say, oh, if they stumble, we're going to be there. Even with the Canucks stumbling. Like, the Canucks have not played well this season. They're minus one goal differential, and they're still ahead of Calgary and Utah, who we're sitting here like, oh, wow, what fantastic seasons.
Yeah, and I like Utah. Coming into the year, I had Utah making the postseason. And, yeah, they're a tough team. They've also had a lot of injuries, and the last three games, they lost three in a row too, and the Blues don't seem to be getting a lot of separation even after, you know, they made their coaching change. The bar, as long as the Canucks get like mid-90 points, you should be able to make it, and to me, you should be able to get to the mid-90 point range. I want to see them get to 100 points by the end of the season. They're on pace for 98.
I came in the season 105 points.
Yeah.
I still think it's very doable.
If they can break 100 points, mm-hmm. I think that's fine by the end of the season, right? It's about, can you trend in the right direction before the postseason? First, you got to get there, and then you got to show that you can be a good team in the postseason. So the Canucks, still a lot of work to do. They have 47 games to go, and they're going to need to play a lot better if they want to make the postseason and do anything beyond that. Keep your thoughts coming in. We'll get to more next on the Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd
and Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Daniel Sprong, left wing with speed to the Vancouver line. High slot, long shot, rolled wide to the net of Demko. Got his own rebound and sent it wide past the far side as well. Vince Dunn holds in left point. Far corner, Jaden Schwartz from along the goal line, threw it to the net. It finds its way past Demko. And the Kraken, with some good pressure on the forecheck, make it a 4-2 hockey game with 4:45 left in the third.
And I believe this goes off the side of the post, then hits Demko and goes in. Just waiting for another look of it. Oh, no. It ends up, so Jaden Schwartz takes the shot, trying to go off the side of Demko's head, misses, and ends up hitting Juleson in front of the net that bounces in and ricochets off him for the Schwartz goal. So it's 4-2 with 4:45 left on, you know, another not the prettiest of goals, but they, you know, puck ends up in the net, so it doesn't really matter. Jaden Schwartz is going to take that every day, but all of a sudden there's only a two-goal lead with 4:45 left in the third period here.
Canucks go on to lose 5-4 in overtime against the Seattle Kraken, had a 4-1 lead in the third period, and that is evaporated in the loss tonight. And keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Now, before we get to some more reaction here on the text inbox and break the game down a bit more, get some player audio as well here, Bick, let's break down the goals we saw here, right? And, you know, the first one, the Vancouver Canucks take the 1-0 lead, and it's just a good old power play goal from the Canucks, right? And, you know, it's pretty simple. Get a shot on goal, crash the net, and Brock Besser puts the home.
Yeah, and I like the quick decision here by Eric Brantrum, because it was mentioned, like, okay, no Quinn Hughes, just make the quick play, make the simple play, and JT wins the draw. It goes right back to JT, who's kind of doing that loop on that left flank, and such a good diagonal seam pass to Jake DeBrusk, who gets a good shot off, and Grubauer makes an incredible save, but Brock Besser drowning on the spot, battling Adam Larson in front of the net, and is able to get his eyes on the puck and then follow it with a stick and just poke it in.
Yeah, and that made it 1-0 for Vancouver, and that game got tied up pretty early in the second period after Matty Beniers' shot looked a bit like a bit of a fluttering puck. It looked like it got deflected, and Demko gets a glove on it, but not enough. Ends up going in to tie the game.
Yeah, some bad luck too, because the puck out of the zone to Jake DeBrusk at the offensive blue line, his stick breaks, and so he can't chip it in. He can't do anything with it. And the Kraken gain possession that way over a stick break. And it's a very passive, like, 3-on-4 entry. It just Beniers in the middle of the ice, shoots it between the two D-men. And, yeah, kind of eats up Demko in that spot and bounces in.
Yeah. The Canucks, however, were able to regain the lead. Connor Garland. And, you know, special teams was going to be a really good talking point about the Canucks tonight, because they scored on the power play. They did tremendously well on the PK. And the man who took a penalty, Connor Garland, gets out of the box and is sprung by Teddy Bluger to make it 2-1 again.
Yeah. Soucy, to me, makes a nice play behind the net, forces the puck to go around and up front to McCann. And Suter's there to block it off his skate. And then it bounces and catches Carson Soucy. But Bluger's on the spot, up the ice to Connor Garland, and they wind up for a slap shot. Ends up not being a fake, but he still finds the 5-hole on Philip Grubauer.
Yeah, and Carson Soucy, he got a secondary assist on that goal, gets a primary assist on the 3-1 goal, and what a nice pass from Carson Soucy. Again, like, these are going to be some really nice talking points and moments we were going to spend talking about how Soucy stepped up, made a nice play, and just an incredible feed over to Brock Besser for his second of the game.
Yeah, it's a nice play out of the zone, too, as he hits JT Miller. A couple of shoulder checks across to his D partner in Juleson. It keeps Bjorkstrand on the wrong side. So he just sends it out. JT also makes a high-level play.
Yeah.
Tight space to get it to Danton Heinen, who draws two Kraken players towards him. Hits Soucy, who threads this between four Kraken players, basically, across the ice to Brock, who just gets a one-timer into the empty net for his 13th of the season.
Yeah, and then in the third, it looked like the Canucks had it fully under control. They score less than 4 minutes in to make it 4-1. Jake DeBrusk getting the tally, and this is just a really nice play by JT Miller.
Yeah, JT, I like a strong play by Brock Besser, too, because on the exit, he holds the puck, finds Forbert on a diagonal, and Forbert's up to JT, who, in congested space, because he got closed on pretty quickly, still slid in Jake DeBrusk in through on goal, and he goes short side on Grubauer.
Yeah, and that was the 16th goal of the campaign for Jake DeBrusk, red hot for Vancouver this season. And then the comeback started. Less than 5 minutes to go, Jaden Schwartz throws a puck to the middle of the ice, and it hits Noah Juleson and goes in. And the head coach talked about that, said that that goal, if you're standing in front of your net, you got to box out, and you can't be in that position to have a puck hit. You got to get out of the crease. And Noah Juleson, wrong spot at the wrong time, and also gets unlucky.
Yeah, he's, you know, does the work beforehand. He's higher up in the play, and that puck doesn't even hit him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, not much to say about it.
Yeah, and then with less than 2 minutes to go, the Seattle Kraken down two. Vince Dunn gets the 4-3 goal, and this is another turnover. Noah Juleson throws the puck to Carson Soucy. It's not a good pass, and Soucy's trying to flip the puck out, can't flip it. Jaden Schwartz gets it and makes no mistake putting it past Thatcher Demko.
Yeah, Noah Juleson overhandles it, and yeah, Soucy definitely could have made a better play, but he's put in a very difficult spot, but he chooses a high-risk option.
Yeah.
You know, that to me is just two-hand chop it out of the zone and just survive to the next play.
Well, and, you know, the coach talks about protecting the guts of the ice, because the Canucks didn't do that, and just over 20 seconds later, only 22 seconds after they had the 4-3 goal.
After a timeout.
After a timeout, the Seattle Kraken tie the game. And the Canucks had a couple chances to get it out. One, Carson Soucy just loses the puck along the boards.
Forward,
just loses the puck along the boards. And Suter also has a chance to get the puck out.
Suter went, like, okay, Forbert misses the puck, right? It happens. But he even takes the forechecker with him, thinking that Forbert still has the puck. So it's loose in the corner. Suter wins it and, like, pins his guy against the glass. And it gets poked out to Jaden Schwartz. And because Suter's in the corner, neither Garland or Joshua protect the middle of the ice.
Yeah.
And you can see what's frustrating with this is Joshua even shoulder checks and looks at Jaden Schwartz coming towards the middle of the ice off the boards and doesn't react to close that space or at least make it difficult for him to get there. And he's able to swoop right through Joshua, get to the middle of the ice where Garland was still just kind of flailing. He was kind of backing out of a stick check there in that spot too. And Schwartz gets two cracks at it and ties the game.
Well, and the hilarity ensued into overtime. The Seattle Kraken completing their comeback. And we talked about this quite a few times already, but if you missed it, Tyler Myers actually makes a great play in the neutral zone, steals the puck from a Seattle player, creates an odd man rush going the other way. And that's when the good decision stopped.
I'll throw a bone to our good friend Pardeep in the text inbox, who always likes to text. Be like, Pitt, can you say the line? And I'll say it here in this spot. I just want to understand. like, what the line of thinking is here. Because there was an opportunity, like, a 3-on-1. You have plenty of space to make the drop pass. Just backhand it. But he opts to draw the defender with him and do a spinorama pass, try to hit either Besser or Miller. And he splits them both. And it goes off the far wall. Couldn't have bounced more perfectly for Vince Dunn to just walk right into it.
Yeah.
And game over.
That's what it kind of squeezes through Thatcher Demko on it as well, right? And it is what it is. The Canucks ended up losing 5-4.
I imagine even Thatcher Demko was like, oh, here we go. Wait, what's happening right now?
I mean, he's probably like, yeah, we're going to win this game. It's like, wait, how is it a breakaway?
What's going on?
Like, honestly, out of all the possible outcomes, that was the worst and the least possible one. Like, out of all the things you could have done.
And that was the second time.
Yeah, because
he had the PK moment earlier.
And this is where, like, I get it. And, you know, Myers is being asked to play up bigger minutes. But it's not even that he played that big of minutes. Played 22-14, and they had time in overtime, too. But the play we're talking about, this is in the first period. The Canucks are on the PK. They do a good job getting the puck up ice. They actually have it in possession. He has the puck on the point.
With so much space.
He had all the time in the world, right? And he could have made a DDD pass if he really wanted to, which I wouldn't have loved, but he could have done. That would have been better than what he just did. He could have thrown it along the boards. He could have just chipped it up to the corner. Like, he could have done.
Or he could have put it into the netting.
He could have He could have done a number of things. The worst thing to
do. He could have passed it to Thatcher Demko.
He could have passed it back to Demko. Honestly, that would have
been
a better decision. The worst decision you could have made was winding up for a slap shot and shooting it right off the pads of the guy in front of you, and that's exactly what he did.
And there was no. It's not as if like Chandler Stephenson just like last second got into the lane. He was in the lane the entire time.
And if you really want to shoot that puck, wrist it and wrist it wide so it doesn't hit the guy. Like throw it. You know what I mean? Shoot the puck wide if you have to. Don't even have it hit the net, and he just winds up a slap shot. It gets blocked, and there's an odd man chance going the other way. Now the Canucks get lucky, and nothing happens with it. But that's the type of decision making you just can't have from your veteran players when Quinn Hughes is out of the lineup, especially when you're already short a guy like Filip Hronek.
And it happened twice.
Yes,
and it didn't burn him the first time, but it burned him the second time in the game-winning goal.
Yeah, and that's how they lose 5-4 here tonight, and a tough one for the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, Anthony texts and shoots the note on Twitter, says, I like how you guys recap the game goal by goal at this point of the post-game show. Yeah, we'd like to, you know, get to it after we get to a lot of reaction and break down what we see on each goal. And there were 9 of them here tonight. Unfortunately, the last one goes in the Seattle Kraken's favor. Before we get to some post-game audio, you know, we have Jake DeBrusk coming up, and you want to hear what he has to say after losing this one here tonight. What else are you seeing on the text inbox that you want to get read to our listeners?
650. So does this defense get a shakeup yet? Trade whoever and whatever to fix the blue line. They played well until they weren't. I can't believe I went from being so happy to disgusted in 20 minutes. That one's from Steve in Prince George. This one, Josh in Mission. Quinn Hart's trophy candidacy just got a huge boost. Incredible finish. I could only laugh at the OT winner. This one, 650, Pardeep. Fired up, Bic. Tyler Myers, I just want to understand. And Look, there's so many good texts. If the Canucks don't make the playoffs this year, I'm going to remember this game. It's embarrassing.
Jay and Moody says, the Canucks lose in overtime, but I don't have their top 2D and top C. And fans are ready to throw in the towel. Keep the faith. They can do a lot better. All right. We were going to get to Jake DeBrusk. We're not going to get to Jake DeBrusk because the man we call the triple threat has now graced us with his presence, arriving to close this one out. You watch him on TV. You hear him on radio. Ian McIntyre is about to be on with us right now.
Just listening to the music, trying to get to my happy place.
There must be some kind of way out of here.
Amen, brother.
Yeah, it's a tough one, right? I mean, we heard, you know, we were going to play Jake DeBrusk's thoughts post-game. We're not going to do that now, but the thing he mentions was it was a devastating loss. You know, he talks about how they were devastated that they had to lose the game the way they did. And, you know, they had a 4-1 lead in the third. You had two goals from Besser. You had a goal from Jake DeBrusk. You had guys stepping across to Susie making good play. And that all just evaporates in the final 5 minutes.
Yeah, I would say it's unbelievable. It feels unbelievable when you're watching it. But it's not unbelievable with this team.
Yeah.
No, it's not. I'm serious. Like, should... Okay, it's the third time in NHL history, apparently, the stat was tweeted. The third time in NHL history that a team has lost a game after leading by three in the final 5 minutes of regulation time. So, yes, there's a rarity it, admittedly. But after all that we've seen from the Canucks, I mean, this is the season of inconsistency. And, yes, they've had all these challenges, including today playing without Pettersson in Hughes. But do you know that had they not become the third team in NHL history to lose a game while leading by three in the final 5 minutes of regulation, this would have been their first two-game home winning streak this season. They're going into 2025 with a team high of one-game winning streaks at home. That to me is more unbelievable than choking on this three-goal lead. Or at least, if you can wrap your head around that stat that they have not managed to win consecutive home games, it's not so surprising the manner in which that they've lost a bunch of them.
So putting all those together, like that's astounding too, the home record and the third time in NHL history.
I've checked it four times. I'm going to check it again because the home record. Because it doesn't seem possible that we're almost at New Year's and they haven't won two in a row at home. But Saddle check. He'll tell me.
So does this make this like a make or break moment all of a sudden for this team? Like I'm curious. Like how you've seen a lot of hockey and you've seen a lot of teams. You've covered a lot of teams. Like what's the response or like what's the necessary response for moments like this?
No, it's not the make or break moment now. Although, you know, one thing to bear in mind, you never know what point that you give away that might cost you something at the end of the season. And the Canucks are now, and this to me is as surprising as anything, 3-8 in overtime and 3-9 if you include their lone shootout foray. You know, that's 6 points that have gone the other way. And of course they're not gonna be 12-0 after regulation time, but even if they're 6-6, that's three more points than they got. We're not even halfway through the year. So if it ends up at the end of the year, like they've bundled away 5 or 6 or 7 points, well that's huge. Because, you know, we know that they're a better team than what they were before last season, certainly. But they're not at the point where, hey, here's 6 or 8 points. It doesn't matter to us. So that's something to watch. I just think, you know, the inconsistency is literally that. It's not all bad. It's the good and the bad. And one of the good things about this team is that they have been resilient and they normally respond to collapses like this. And I think they will. But, I mean, you know, as Connor Garland said, it's hard to win games in this league. So even though you have, and I know that sounds obvious, but when you
it's easy to lose leads.
When you're up by three in the final 5 minutes, that's the game that you must win.
Yeah.
That shouldn't even be a question about, are you going to win that game?
I've heard it's only happened twice in NHL history.
Before,
are you going to have 1 point? Like, that shouldn't even be the conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, how you collect 2 points. And so even though the effort, I'm sure, is going to be better in Calgary, I don't know after that, because who knows? Second game, 2 games from now, who knows? But, you know, just because your effort's better and your execution's better doesn't mean you get to win. But I think that they have been very resilient. We know, as we've spoken many times, they've been extremely resourceful and opportunistic in finding ways to continue to nudge themselves up the standings while facing all these personnel changes. You know, Tocchet said, I would say the big thing tomorrow, Tocchet said he might have an update for us on how long they're going to be without Hughes and Pettersson. Maybe he won't, probably he won't, but that could be the big news tomorrow. Certainly, you can't, especially with Hughes, because there's nobody on earth like him other than maybe Cale Makar, and maybe a couple of years from now, maybe Lane Hutson. I don't know. He's such a rare player. You can't replace him, and if he's out for a significant period of time, that could be a game changer for this team. But in the meantime, I expect they'll have a lively practice tomorrow. They usually do that after these performances, and I think they'll have a better execution when they play on New Year's Eve in Calgary. But beyond that, I'm not making any predictions.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to really predict how it's going to go, because they may have a great performance or they may have a bit of a dud. Again, the inconsistencies, it's tough to say, right? But, you know, we were talking about this a bit earlier before you joined us.
They don't stack the duds very often.
No, they don't. That's but the they thing. Also don't stack the great
no,
performances
exactly.
either, right?
Which so, is what we're talking about yeah, through the first 2.5 months of this season.
And, you know, that's why when we talk about the ceiling of the team, you have to stack together these performances that are good, and you're like, okay, now you're showing that you can do more than being a bubble team, so to speak. And, again, like, you have injuries tonight. That's all fine and good, but you don't cop up the 3-goal lead. But we have some common themes, though, right? The Canucks so far this year are not good with the third period lead. They're not. Last year they had one regulation loss. What was the record again?
42-1-4.
Yeah. And they're nowhere near that so far this season. The refrain, we didn't protect the guts of the ice, something we've heard a lot through 35 games. We didn't hear it that often, especially the early parts of last year. How much of that was the Canucks last season, as when they started the year, got a lot of bounces, scored a lot of goals, and perhaps didn't have to rely on it as much? And how much of it is them failing to play to the tenets of their staples like they were doing last year?
Yeah, I think they're just failing at key moments. And most of the time, it's an individual error, which is what sports primarily is. Like, rarely, maybe football is different because of the actual play calling, but, you know, rarely is a coach responsible for the performance in any one game. A coach bears responsibility for a lot of the big picture, obviously, and you know, the team's traits and its culture and performance over an extended period. But in any one game that you win or lose, it's usually because somebody made a good play, somebody made a terrible play. And the Canucks this year have just too often made the terrible play. Like, I bringing us back to Connor Garland, I asked him about overtime, and he says, overtime, if you make a mistake, the other team counters. And it just seems like over and over again, the Canucks make the big mistake in overtime that allows other teams to counter. So, you know, tonight, that's a terrible play by Tyler Myers. It might even be a poor play by, I'd have to really look at it again, it's maybe not the smartest play by Besser and Miller to both be going to the net in that situation as well. When your defenseman has stopped up and is standing still, maybe someone has to be a little higher. Although, you know, that wasn't an NHL pass that Tyler Myers made. So that's the winning goal. The fourth goal, Dakota Joshua let Schwartz go by him. And once Schwartz got by and inside Joshua, there was very little resistance the rest of the way. So that's guts of the ice that Tockett was talking about. Juulsen and Soucy, who have become a pretty dependable second pair since Filip Ronek got injured. Well, they were horrible on the third goal. Each one made a poor play with the puck. And then, you know, what most of us thought, and certainly I thought it was just bad luck, a puck bouncing in off Juulsen. Tockett told us post-game, well, he shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't be standing at the top of the crease, and he should have blocked out Sprong. Like, you can't be 100% all the time. You can't be 100% most of the time. But you have to limit the huge mistakes that cost you goals. And I think that's one of the key differences this year from last year, is we've seen so often the Canucks have hurt themselves. They've made it easy on the other team. And last season, they rarely made it easy on the other team. They forced other teams to earn it. And yeah, there were still, of course, innumerable individual breakdowns and mistakes that led to opposition goals, but there was not the repetition of these big key moment, big time mistakes that we've seen this year.
The thing is, you mentioned earlier inconsistency, Sam. We've discussed it a lot prior to your arrival, Ian. I'm not sure what to expect moving forward, because there were good elements to take out of this game. That 55 minutes.
Well, they win this game 4-3. They don't allow that Schwartz game tying goal. The conversation is completely different
about how
they won the game.
And we can sit here and say, okay, well, that's the version of the team I want to see moving forward. But now these 5 minutes exist, or plus overtime. And now you're like, well, is that the next game of, is that the version of the team that we're going to see moving forward? And I guess that's why I mentioned, is it make or break? Because if it's make, you can be the first 55 minutes. If it's break, you're the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be able to conclude anything about this team for a while.
Yeah, which is frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but in a way, that's the excitement of sports and reality television, is that you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. Maybe the Canucks are taking that don't know part to an extreme. I'm not sure they know themselves. I don't think Rick Tockett necessarily knows himself, because he said, a few days ago, I'm trying to think what the conversation was about. I think it was, about Miller. Maybe it was the Miller-Pedersen stuff. But he said, he can't pinpoint. It's been such a weird season. It's been such a roller coaster. He knows, this Miller-Pedersen thing has nothing to do with, this is talk, it has nothing to do with anything that we've seen on the ice, but he said it's just been such a weird season, it's hard to pinpoint what it is that we're seeing, other than the team has shown that it's inconsistent. And that, I think, until we see them stack, 4, 5, 6 good or bad games in a row, I don't think we're going to be able to conclude anything. I think what they've shown is a lot of toughness, and as I said before, they've shown resilience. I mean, look at where they are in the standings. If you reverse the wins and losses, it's probably too late now for make and break to come back from that, but we're still in December. So I don't see it as make or break. I don't see it as a panic. It's just really discouraging, I think, for them to throw away a game in which it symbolically would have meant a lot if they'd beaten Seattle 4-1, even 4-2 without Hughes and Pedersen. That's tough mentally, and they're going to have to, they're going to have to rally themselves and talked about that post game, that he's sure there's some guys who feel really badly, but the main thing now is bring energy to practice tomorrow and be better for the next game. And again, I think the Canucks will be better the next game. Doesn't mean they're going to win, but I think they're going to find a way to execute better. And I think in the next little while, they'll continue to get points here and there. But it's impossible to say when is the 5-game winning streak coming. it's been so hard to find a three-game winning streak.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
and the same thing for a losing streak as well. So I think for the time being, it's probably more of the same, and you hope at some point as the guys that they've missed come back, and again, Hughes and Pettersson are huge question mark, and the other guys who have been away, like JT Miller is still not playing like JT Miller as we know him. Brock Besser only now is looking as good as he did before he had his concussion. We're still waiting for Philip Roenick, and maybe waiting another month for, well, we probably will be waiting another month for Philip Roenick. We're still waiting for Thatcher Demko to be the Vezina finalist, Demko, because he certainly wasn't that tonight. Although, you know, Tocchet point out he's the least of their problems, and I tend to agree with that. We're going to have to wait, I think, until these guys find a way. Either they've played enough that they find the best versions of themselves, and then this team is going to be the team that we saw last year, or we'll probably make a conclusion that, okay, they're not going to be the players that they were this year for all these individual reasons. But we need a larger sample size before we can make that declaration.
I mean, just to outline how the season's gone, they started the season with a three-game losing streak. They had two OTL losses, right? Then they won four in a row. Then they lost two in a row. Then they won three in a row. And that's the last time they've won three or more games, right? The Canucks have five instances of losing two or more games in a row. They have four instances of winning two or more games in a row. So it's been slightly more to the losing side of things.
So that's since late October.
Right. And so if you start looking at it now, too, they have 17 wins in 35 games. So I can understand the mood being like they've won less games than they've lost. And I don't see them being a playoff team, but they've picked up eight OTL losses, which is more than any other team in the NHL.
Yeah.
So that's what's saving them. Like, if it wasn't for the OTLs, right? But I can understand if you're a fan watching the team, when you see your team lose more than they've won, it does probably give you a feeling of, like, they're not on the right track. Like, I can understand the type of vibe it gives off and the feeling it gives off.
Yeah, well, they blew, what was it, a two-goal lead in Utah.
Yeah.
Right? When they lost in OT there, they've rallied in games like the one against St. Louis to get points. But they've... You know, they've managed to collect the loser points, which, you know, sometimes is good. Like in the games where you are rallying, that's good that you got one instead of nothing. But there's been a whole pile of these games. It feels like they've gotten one instead of two.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first two games of the season against Calgary and Philly, right? Like they should have won both those games.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's still a value to getting – points out of this, but you can't continue like 3-8 for a team with this amount of experience and this amount of ability. And remember, they were 3-7 with Quinn Hughes and Pettersson. So, you know, there's something going on at 3-on-3 that has been hurting them, and that could haunt them at the end. They need to find a way to get more games. Obviously, Captain Obvious here. They need to get 2 points, not one.
Yeah.
In the end, you get 1 point a game, you're missing the playoffs, right? You have to, and especially in games where you have the lead late in the third, at home, against a team that hadn't won, had lost five in a row, like, that's got to be 2 points in the bank.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Ian, great stuff as always here on the post-game show. We look forward to reading your latest on Sportsnet.ca. I know you're still working at getting that done, but it'll be here soon.
I have time on my side. It was nice to spend an extra 5 minutes with you. I'm sure you appreciated my presence.
We certainly did, especially in a game like this where it was good getting some relief from the bullpen, you know, closing this one out as always.
We did. You were like the 55 minutes of the game, and we were like the final 5 minutes.
Yeah, 100%. We just needed you to save us. Otherwise, we would have collapsed.
Oh, stop.
Thanks as always, Ian. Look forward to reading your latest on Sportsnet.ca, and we'll chat with you on Tuesday when the Canucks are in Calgary taking on the Flames.
I will look forward to that.
Bick, great stuff as always. You're back at it with Dan Riccio on Monday on Canucks Central. I'm off on Monday, but I'll be back on Tuesday.
Who's on the show?
Usually it's Don Taylor and Frank Saravalli, so we'll see where that's going to be at.
There you go. Yeah, I'm covering on Monday, and then I'm with Brooke Ward on Tuesday, and then we got the game.
Yeah, look forward to that. That's Tuesday. Canucks take on the Flames. Thanks to Lena, and thanks to Eddie for producing the show, doing a great job as always. Thank you all for calling in, listening, participating. Always a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll chat with you again very soon. This has been the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.